The team really understood our business really well. The engineers working on a feature, or the designer designing a certain page, like they understood like at a deep level, like what the business was trying to achieve and why that was important. And that understanding really helps in the small decisions that you're making every day. And so we never had this working style where we design something and just like chuck it over the fence for someone to go build. Like the engineers, the product managers, the designers were in our kind of business conversations and really understood what we were trying to achieve. My name is Jason Harbert, and I'm the co-founder and CTO at Flowspace.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Like 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to
do next.
Took many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a
pain. Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Labhart. And today, how Jason Harbert is making your e-com fulfillment simple by automating operations and omni-channel integration. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Grow your API user adoption and improve engineering velocity with friction-free integration experiences. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in minutes. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, and AutoTrader, you're in good hands. Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com. Jason Harbert grew up in the middle of nowhere, Ohio. He got into video games, which led him into programming, which led him to Linux and internet security and joining the hacking club. He studied computer science at the University of Cincinnati, but left his senior year to hit the startup scene in the Bay Area. Outside of tech, he lives in Ohio and is married with a 13-month-old son. He loves to travel and spend time with his family, trying new restaurants. Jason and his co-founder, Ben, were having a beer coming out of their prior startup life. Over the beer, Ben was sharing some stories about tight warehouse space and product distribution. They started to ask the question, how can you add flexibility to warehousing? They decided to set out and build something to create this solution. This is the creation story of Flowspace.
Flowspace is a e-commerce and retail fulfillment platform. We work with brands to help them do two things. We help them optimize and orchestrate their fulfillment operations. Really, when a brand who is selling online or selling into retail channels approaches us, what we'll do is we will look at their, say, last few years of sales data and help them understand things like, how many fulfillment centers should they have? Where should those go? Should you have one in Texas and one in Ohio? Should you have 10? And once we help them understand what their optimal fulfillment network looks like, we'll help them understand, how do you place products into that network? Which products go where? How much inventory should you hold at different locations? All of this really matters and helps the brands reduce cost. If you're storing inventory in the right places at the right quantities, when a sale happens in, say, Cincinnati, where I am, you don't have to ship it from Texas. You ship it from your Northern Kentucky facility, and it gets on a truck and it goes ground for $4 and it still gets to me in one day. That's how you effectively execute on what someone like Amazon is doing. And then on the execution parts, we actually help our brands execute. So we will forward deploy their inventory within our network of warehouses, and the brands will use us for order management, inventory management. They have full visibility over their supply chain and operations of where their product is at and what's the status of orders. In the warehouses, the warehouse operators will use the FlowSpace platform for as their warehouse management system. So they are packing and shipping out these orders all using our software. Our business model at FlowSpace is unique in that we don't own or operate any of the facilities that kind of comprise our network. These are professional 3PLs that we've partnered with, and they use our software. So FlowSpace started as many great startups do over a beer. I was coming out of a startup that I was doing. I think I was moving back to LA. This is like 2016, 2017. I was staying with my friend Ben at his place while I tried to find an apartment in LA. And I think that's when Ben and I got in this routine of kind of sharing ideas on things we could do. Ben was an early employee at a company called The Honest Company. They make baby products, baby diapers, things like that. He was with them through their own extreme growth, and he was running their kind of warehousing and logistics. He had this problem where he had trucks of diapers on the road, and long story short, they get to the warehouse and there's nowhere to put them. So he was in a situation where he had no idea what warehouse space was available. He's going down the sidewalk, knocking on warehouse doors, trying to figure out where he could store these diapers for a few months. At the time in 2016 or 17, warehousing space was really tight, and he got laughed out of a lot of these buildings. They wanted you to lease hundreds of thousands of square feet for the next 10 years, not just store some overflow stuff. And so we had this idea about what does the shared economy mean for warehousing? Could we build software to make this problem go away and make it really simple? How do we add flexibility into warehousing? And that was the impetus of starting FlowSpace, is that we had this idea about just making warehousing easy and flexible. We applied to Y Combinator and got in. And the company has evolved a lot since then. Predominantly, our business today is e-commerce and retail fulfillment. But the heart of it, of this dynamic virtual network, is still a core of what we do.
Let's dive into that MVP you built. Maybe it was Y Combinator, maybe it was Post That. You decide. But tell me about that MVP. What sort of tools you're using and how long it took you to build?
We're 7 going on 8 years into this, and it feels like there have been a lot of different MVPs or iterations of the FlowSpace platform. I think there's 2 like real MVPs that kind of stand out to me. The first was after Ben and I had that conversation about this idea of FlowSpace. I was coming out of a startup. I really was not wanting to jump into another one. You're often approached by friends or family that are like, hey, I got this idea, build this thing for me. But I agreed to build a prototype. We were using Ruby on Rails, JavaScript. The prototype was very Airbnb-ish, where you could go and find warehouses and book space in a warehouse. And then there was like an admin kind of backend where, you know, you could create a warehouse and list the different attributes of it. And then operationally, there was also like a component where you could create an order and the warehouse could receive in your goods. And then you could create another order and ship out those goods. It was very basic. It was all pallet-based movements. But what it did is it allowed us to actually start working on the supply side of FlowSpace. And we were able to go visit these warehouses and sign them up to be a part of our network. When we went to apply to YC, we didn't have any customers, we didn't have any revenue, but we were growing our network and getting warehouses to agree to be a part of it. So that was really the first prototype. I think the second prototype is just the iterations that happened when we were in Y Combinator. There's this quote that you don't know what your company is until you get your first customer. And I think that was very true for us, is that we had this idea in our head of what FlowSpace was going to be, but it wasn't until we actually got in there and started to sign up customers and have them use the platform that everything started to rapidly evolve. And where we are today in doing, say, e-commerce fulfillment, that's just an evolution that we went through by listening to the customers and kind of reacting to what they needed and how they were using the platform.
My next question is around building that MVP and trade-offs and decisions, right? And you kind of touched on some, maybe dive into one or two of the biggest ones and tell me about some of the trade-offs you had to make. And maybe it's around technical choice or like feature limitation where you start, or technical debt acceptance, all those things, those decisions and trade-offs and how you coped with them.
Anytime you have a small team, and especially when you're growing really quickly, you have to be like really focused and you really have to nail like the MVP. And for us, when I think about like an MVP, we did it back then, we still do today. Like, we really explore like what that MVP is. what is the smallest amount of something we can build that will deliver customer value, and try not to pull everything else into it. Especially when you're like in a really early stage startup, you might have a 10-month runway. You've got 10 months of cash until your business shuts down. We would look at the project and trim it down to like, all right, what small thing that will take us 2 weeks to build will deliver some ounce of customer value? And then if someone actually uses it and they actually find some value in it, we'll follow it up with this next thing and the next thing. We had that seniority on the team. We had that maturity on the team to be able to do that early on, be ruthless about defining that MVP. And so it wasn't just one thing that we built where we did this. It was everything. There were like non-negotiables that I think we had the maturity to not compromise on from an early age, and things like code quality or high test coverage. We knew that the feature would take longer because we weren't going to give up on those things. Like, we wanted to make sure that this thing we were rolling out had test coverage. But that was baked into the MVP.
This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Whether you're growing the user adoption of your public API or streamlining internal development, SDKs can turn the chore of API integration into effortless implementation. Unburden your API users from guessing their way around your API while keeping your team focused on your product. Shorten the time to live integration and provide a delightful experience for your customers. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate up-to-date, robust, idiomatic SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in just a matter of minutes. SDKs are feature-rich with type safety, auto-retries, and pagination, everything you need to give your API the developer experience it deserves. Deliver a premium API experience without the premium price tag. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory to get started and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. So let's go past the second iteration, right? Maybe post Y Combinator, you've got that MVP, it's working, you're getting some traction. Tell me about how you've progressed and matured the product over time. And I think to wrap that in a box a little bit, what I'm looking for is, how do you go about building your roadmap? How do you decide what is the next most important thing to build or to address with FlowSpace?
Our roadmap has always been really heavily informed by what our customers are asking for. We still to this day pull our customers together and formally go through exercises where we discover what our platform is doing well, what it's not doing well. But these are conversations that we're having every week with our customers, shaping our roadmap around that. One thing that I'm a fan of is thinking about your roadmap in terms of different swim lanes. If you look at your engineering capacity and you say, all right, I've got 100% capacity, what I like to do is to take, say, 70% of that and say, all right, I'm going to reserve this amount for feature development. And I'll reserve another 20% for engineering initiatives. And maybe the 10% is support initiatives or something like that. Because what that let us do was to not get into this really weird position where you're trying to prioritize, say, a new shiny button that everyone, especially on the business side, everyone really wants the new shiny button. Meanwhile, you've got this other thing you really need to do, like a database upgrade that no one wants you to do on the business side. And you're trying to prioritize that one versus this one. Like, the database upgrade is never going to win. What that let us do on the roadmap was like effectively take those kind of things that need to happen that aren't sexy out of the equation. And they're not competing for resources. So externally, like when we talk to the team at large or show our roadmap off, we're speaking to the new products that we're building and the kind of the fun, sexy things that we're doing. But on the technical teams, like, we're also able to bake in, like, all right, we've got the database update going on, things like that.
So here you're talking about we, right? And I'm curious about how you built that team, right? What did you look for in those people to indicate that they were the winning horses to join you?
I think we got really lucky with our early team, especially on the technical teams. We hired some really great engineers early on. I skewed a little bit senior in like the first probably 3 or 4 engineers, but that seniority really brought a lot of maturity, especially when negotiating like MVPs or deciding on a product roadmap. These were people that have been through it before and could help decide like what was required and what's not, what's a non-negotiable and what's not, and think long-term in terms of the vision of where you want things to go and why you're making these decisions along the way, but really focusing on the short-term. I think one thing that also helped us is we created these company values early on. And when we did that, it felt really weird because we're this tiny company and we're defining these values. And we've only been around for like a year. Like, how do we know what our values are? But we really came up with what was important to the group of us. And a lot of our values, like expressing different ways to say, we all really care. We all give a crap. There's one like we all do the dishes or make it your problem. That helped us in hiring, and it spoke to the people that we wanted to be a part of our team. Like, we wanted like people that had high autonomy, that were able to execute, that didn't just sit around looking for something to do. I think the other thing is the team really understood our business really well. The engineers working on a feature, or the designer designing a certain page, like they understood like at a deep level, like what the business was trying to achieve and why that was important. And that understanding really helps in the small decisions that you're making every day. And so we never had this working style where we design something and just like chuck it over the fence for someone to go build. Like, the engineers, the product managers, the designers were in our kind of business conversations and really understood what we were trying to achieve.
This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. If slow QA processes bottleneck your software engineering team and you're releasing slower because of it, you need a solution. You need QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, AutoTrader, and many more, you're in good hands. Ready to ship faster with fewer bugs? Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com to see if they can help you squash the QA bottleneck.
Now you're further along. I'm sure there's some really interesting stories here. Tell me about scalability, right? Was this built with scale in mind at the very beginning, or to scale efficiently from day one, maybe right post Y Combinator or during? Or have there been interesting areas where you've had to fight it as you've grown?
So I spoke to the senior team, and I think that helped us build a system that was able to scale effectively. Some of these decisions around like data models or our database or using different technologies, like that really became important as we started to scale. I'm super thankful of that and that we didn't face a lot of downtime or challenges along the way. However, absolutely, there have been moments that like our systems have been totally tested. I can think back to like when we raised our Series B round of funding. This was in like 2000 to 2021. Everything for us was really exploding. Not only did we raise a lot of money and we were out like building the team and hiring, but we were signing up customers really quickly. Our order volume during that time period, I think, was like 7x. It was like Thanksgiving of 2021 that I spent the Thanksgiving on Zoom with the team because we were just trying to keep things afloat. And so I was listening to a podcast back then on hypergrowth, and I forget the name of the podcast, but someone was comparing hypergrowth at a startup to a doctor that's working at the emergency room. These 10 people got shot. This guy just walked in, he's stabbed. This lady's having a baby. You can't save everyone. So you just have to like really prioritize and execute on one thing at a time. And so that was a really chaotic time for us. It was a hard time for me, but that's just how we got through it day to day. It was just focusing on one thing at a time and trying to control what we could. Having a senior team and making some smart decisions early on really helped with that.
So as you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built with FlowSpace, what are you most proud of?
I think something that's really cool about FlowSpace is that we defined a new category. There's this concept of on-demand warehousing, and that actually came out of us at Y Combinator, where we were trying to figure out how we described ourselves. One way that we thought that we could describe ourselves was like AWS for warehouses. With AWS, when you want to spin up a new server, you spin it up and spin it down, and it's flexible and you can add capacity. We were saying that we were AWS for warehousing. And that's where this concept of like on-demand warehousing started. We use that to describe ourselves. We're like, if you need a warehouse here, you just spin it up. And if you don't need it the next month, you can just spin it down. I see that term still used today. And I think it's really cool that we were a part of creating that term and defining that new concept. Another thing that I'm just proud of is just the team that we've built. Like, we have some really amazing people on the team. And as a founder, when your team starts growing and you start having the opportunity to listen to other people talk about the company and to pitch the company to customers or to a candidate that you're trying to hire, it's a little surreal to listen to someone else who believes in this idea just as much as you do, and they're selling your idea now. That's been really cool. We went fully remote back in 2020. Because of, I think, the nature of our business, where we have inventory from our customers distributed across the country in all of these facilities, and because our workforce is remote, I don't see everything all in one place, and I rarely get to see all of the employees in one place. I have friends here in Cincinnati who run businesses, and sometimes I'll visit their business and I'll see all of the buildings and all of the operation and all of the people, and I'll think, wow, how many folks work here? And they'll tell me, and I'll say, that's not that much bigger than FlowSpace, but you just don't get to see it all in one place. And we have the opportunity once a year where we get the whole team together, and it's just surreal to see like the entire team in one place and see the true size of the business.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
Yeah, so this is logistics, and there have been a lot of mistakes over the years. One thing that we've always done really well is to be a mature, kind of dependable partner. And if mistakes happen, we have taken responsibility for it. I can think of one, and it stands out to me because it was really like the first time that I dealt with this. Prior to FlowSpace, I had done a string of startups, but they were pretty small. And I've been like a software developer for most of my career. As a developer, I'm not often in situations where I'm dealing with customers that are upset. We were young. We were still in Y Combinator, and we had brought on this customer who was going through a hypergrowth of their own. And they were a large customer, probably too large to be working with us at that time. And they were having some chaos in their own operations. A problem happened and some of their inventory went missing. And so the customer was really upset about this, rightfully. And we had a call scheduled. So it was me and my partner, Ben. We were in this conference room. We're literally getting screamed at. The customer was so upset, yelling at us. And this was one of the first times in my career that I had been in that position where like I am being yelled at a customer. And so I had my hands on my face, and I hadn't been in a situation like that where I had a customer kind of yelling at me. But what I thought was really impressive is my partner, who had spent his career in logistics, he was totally in control in that moment. He responded. He took accountability for what happened. And he said, this is our fault. We would take accountability for it. And here's what I'd like to do to make this right. I was really impressed by that. I didn't, know him. That's how you dealt with those situations at that time. Yeah, I think just that was one of the first times that I think we screwed up and that we made things right. But I think our company has always done a good job at that if something goes wrong.
This will be fun. Jason, what does the future look like for the product and for your team?
So we are 7 years into this. We're still growing, still scaling. And I think every moment of flow space where we've been growing brings these new challenges on. Two things I think about when I look at the future of flow space and all of the kind of the growth that is happening. One is what I'd say is like operational efficiency. And it's not only that our servers and our databases like need to stay up and humming. It's that our software has to be intuitive and easy to use. Our facilities need to be able to handle this new amount of volume that's occurring. And so they need better tools. We need stricter processes. As we've grown, processes we've had that worked at, a lower volume, as you start to grow, just don't work anymore. And so you respond to that and you rethink how things should work and you're building new functionalities. That kind of speaks to like the fulfillment side of our business and the work that we're doing there of just refining our processes and the facilities. The other thing we're doing is looking at our customers and talking to them about what other challenges they face beyond, say, inventory management or order management. This could be things like how they work with their manufacturers and the complexity of cutting purchase orders and how those purchase orders are reflected against new sales orders that are coming in and what we could do there, or demand planning. One challenge for brands as they scale is your inventory isn't just centralized in a single spot. Now you've got your inventory distributed in many places and you need to balance that. You don't want to store so much that you've dumped all of your money into a bunch of product, but you don't want to store so little that you run out of product before it sells. The theme is just helping brands with things that they're having challenges with that are in the logistics and inventory space.
So let's switch to you, Jason. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why?
I've had a few advisors and kind of friends and advisors that have been helpful to me over the years. One of my advisors, Chris, was on the founding team at Yammer. He and I, we still keep up quarter to quarter formally in this advisory role. But early on, I was talking to him every month and we were having hour to multi-hour conversations, thinking about how to build a team, how to structure the team. He was really helpful for me to think through that. One of my other friends, Brad, he's been someone that I've always bounced ideas off of and heard his input. He's on the engineering team at Fastly, and he works with these systems that need to be like highly performant. Talking about how we handled some of that scale early on, being able to bounce ideas off of him was really helpful and influential. Beyond that, I think the engineers that we've hired have been really impactful and helpful to me just over the years. Coming into this company when I thought I was a pretty good engineer to start with, then you bring on engineers who are better than you and you're learning things from. That's been awesome. Managers that I've hired over the years that have been awesome in different ways that you get to see how they handle certain things and adopt that as your own. And then being a part of certain groups has been really helpful as well. We went through Y Combinator, and one of the things that was helpful in that was that to be around a kind of a cohort of companies that were all going through the same thing. We were all in an early stage. We met every other week or so as a small group. And these problems that we thought were unique to us, we'd get into the room and everyone was having the same problem or a similar problem. There was a lot of value in being able to share and talk through that. Professionally, I'm a part of a group called YPO and a similar setup where I am in a group of people that are all founding or running businesses that are at a certain scale. That's helpful in a similar way of problems that I'm facing personally or professionally, or the things that I'm celebrating. I get to be a part of a group who's I'm able to share that with and talk through it with. So I think all of those things have been awesome to have.
Okay, Jason, last question. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
I've been mentoring students on companies they're starting or ideas they have or just entrepreneurship in general. And a lot of my advice is just the advice that we got when we went through YC, which is if you're a really young company, focus on two things. Focus on talking to your customers and building. And talking to your customers, does anyone actually want this thing? Is this an actual problem that they're having? And I think in a lot of times you have an idea in your head of what a problem might be. And as you talk to potential customers, you'll realize that like you were off or you were way off, and you should have the maturity to be able to pivot and to listen, because the worst thing you could do is get stuck in your ways and say they're wrong. A lot of times on the building front, I see people that do things that they think are really important, administrative stuff or meeting with an investor or X, Y, and Z. And sometimes that stuff like is just busy work and it gets in the way. And in fact, when we were in YC, like they actively encouraged us to say no to every investor coffee that was proposed and just focus on building the product and getting that first customer. I can share a story. When we were in Y Combinator, one of our mentors was this guy, Eric. It was like a Saturday. We went out and were throwing a football back and forth and talking about what Flow Space could be in the future when we were a $1 billion company. And we came back to our computers and we put together this PowerPoint that was this like massive architectural diagram of the $1 billion version of Flow Space. We brought it into our advisor's office and he's looking at this paper. And I like to say that he ripped it up and threw it away. I actually don't remember if he ripped it up. But he looked at us and he said, "Do you have one person who has paid for this thing yet?" And we're like, "What? No, like we don't have a customer. Get one person to pay for your product and then you can tell me what it's going to be." In hindsight, like at the time it was like jarring, but in hindsight, I'm like, oh, he was so right. No one wanted it. And so we were wasting time by envisioning this massive thing. Focus on that immediate first step. Like, how do you get one person to pay for it? Because if you can get one person to sign up and pay for your product, you can get two. And if you can get two, you can get four. And each customer that uses it, you're going to learn a little bit from. You're going to make your product better. You're going to make your pitch a lot better. And it becomes easier and easier to scale that way. Make a product that few amount of people like really love and know why they love it, rather than just trying to blast something out there for everyone.
Man, I couldn't agree more with that. Well, Jason, thank you for being on the show today, and thanks for telling the creation story of Flow Space.
Thank you.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story.
Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Laphart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.